Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our guest segment of the Common Sense Show. Thanks for staying with us. We're really, really glad to be with you, and we appreciate you taking time out of your busy lives because you care enough about your country, your family, and your creator to come here on a regular basis, and I wanted you to know how much that means to us. We are the Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time, and I wouldn't necessarily categorize this as an emergency broadcast, but I kind of feel panicked, so maybe I should categorize this as an emergency broadcast. We have our prepper expert, Bob Griswold, on, and kind of our go-to guy with regard to emergency and standard preparations, and we're going to be talking about the supply chain, but also I think we're going to get a little bit into the food supply as well, and the two are interrelated. And I got to tell you, folks, this could be really an upsetting interview to a lot of people. It could cause people to lose sleep, and that's not what we're trying to do here. I don't want to give you hyperbole. I want to give you facts for preparation where you can align yourself against the forces that could be coming against you, and you're not caught off guard. And my goal here is to maximize survival and ease the pain that would take away from our comfort of living. And that's our entire purpose here whatsoever. I don't believe in clickbait or any of that other nonsense. We're here to just try to serve the public and tell the truth. And we're here because the mainstream media is suppressing the truth about the coronavirus. They're suppressing the truth about so many important things because if they told you the truth, Dave Hodges would still be coaching college basketball and teaching my classes. So I hope you take that as a testimonial that we're here, I think, for the right reasons. And joining us on our newsmaker line is Bob Griswold of Ready Made Resources, and his website is readymaderesources.com. And I will tell you, anything you want with prepping, Bob Griswold is your guy. Bob, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. I know this is short notice, but this topic is so critical.
Well, Dave, you know, I always enjoy coming on this program. I just think it's very productive. You know, even as you and I talk back and forth, we encourage one another. And again, it's like you said, it's not about fear. Let me put it this way. It's not about irrational fear. Fear of God, yes. Fear of his judgment, yes. And a holy fear, what the Bible talks about, motivates us to do something. An unholy or an irrational fear paralyzes us. And so those two fears go completely two different ways. They have completely two different outcomes. The holy fear, or fear of God's judgment and realizing what's coming, causes us to do what so many patriarchs in the Bible did. They prepared, they built something, they made something, they had to do something. And in doing that, they not only saved themselves, but they saved a whole nation. I mean, Joseph saved a whole nation from preparing because he prepared. The people in Jerusalem that fled when they saw the army surrounding it, I mean, that was a generation of Christian people that were saved because they moved with holy fear. On the other hand, and there are those people out there, and that's not what we're trying to do, is like, you know, the space aliens are coming down to steal your food supply. Now, we can debate that. It's kind of a little hyperbole, but,
you know, warn me when you're going to make a joke so I don't swallow my water down the wrong pipe.
Fear like that, you know, that paralyzes people, and that's not what we seek to do. But at the same time, Dave, I think almost any person who's conscious of world events today would say, I have never seen anything even remotely close to what we're seeing today.
No.
I mean, it's just not this. And we have to realize containment's lost on this coronavirus. Containment is lost. It's going to hit. It's going to hit the United States. There's going to be a lot of misery that goes around. And I do want to address that. A lot of people buying protective equipment, which is good, but I want to address that just shortly. But another thing, I just pulled up a story, Dave, and it says it's frightening. And let me get here to the story. Let's see here. Okay, I want to get back there. But basically the story is that the worst fears are being realized as the locusts are giving way to a new set of locusts. They've actually bred and they're producing a whole other generation of locusts. So, you know, generally I don't know how many locusts one locust or one breeding couple of locusts make, but it's a lot. And so this second wave could be far worse than the new wave. I mean, China has already implemented, like, I don't know, millions of these ducks they're putting on their border just to eat the locusts. I don't know how effective that'll be. But this is going to dramatically affect world food supply, because even though it might not, you know, the crops that come out of Africa, we might not come to the United States, that shortage of food in Africa is going to affect the buying in South America. Supply chain in China is already shutting down. The demand for crops from the United States going to Africa will increase. And this is when we talk about supply chain. These are the things that we're talking about. These disasters have an extreme ripple effect that goes through a society. Do you remember last year, that drought? Remember the drought that killed all the food? They planted the corn, drought killed it, then they planted it again, and the hail killed it.
Yep.
And they said, don't worry, it's okay, because next year we'll recover. Do you remember him saying that?
Oh, I remember that well, yes.
Well, it doesn't look like they're going to recover this year. It looks like more bad things are going to happen. And so that optimistic, rosy prediction about food was just that, a rosy, optimistic prediction. And if we see much more of this, we're going to see some real crises in the supply chain for just food. And when we, and Dave, I know you sell food, and I want to tell people, I think all you're going to have to do over the next couple of weeks is start going to the supermarket, and you're going to start to see more blanks. Do you remember we saw those blanks last year?
Yes.
And sorry for the inconvenience, the beans aren't here because of the crop disaster. Those, Walmart actually had those little signs out. I think you could easily start seeing those again. And here's the thing, Dave. It's like a wave. You can catch the wave, and the power and the energy of the wave will propel you forward. If you don't catch the wave, you're left behind. And again, this is a holy fear thing. This is not irrational fear. If you do not get ahead of this curve, people are starting to figure it out. I mean, I'm talking to people now that there's a furniture company. Well, they can't get certain lacquers and dyes. I promise you, all the food labels, the ink on those food labels, I would say most likely comes from China. The acetone, all those things that are needed for printing come from China. And I buy stuff from China, and I'm getting letters saying, well, they've revoked our permit to work in our industrial park. We can't go to work. We can't produce it. We normally, when I order Bofang radios, Dave, I get them in immediately. We waited a month to get the new order of Bofang radios in. We never wait that long. And so supply chain starts to break down, and it doesn't take the fact that you can't get the radio. You might not get the cardboard. You might not get the little nylon, you know, lanyard. You might not get the plastic that makes the antenna. There's dozens and dozens of things in that radio that all need to come together. So just imagine if you drew a circle, and in that circle you drew A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, okay? And all those are dependent on others. So if D goes down, well, C is dependent on D, E is dependent on D, F is dependent on D, and so then F and all those go down, and once all that goes down, getting it back up and running isn't a matter of fact of just starting it all over again, because they can't make the plastic without the raw material, but they can't get the raw material without the gasoline, and they can't get the gasoline without the refinery running. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's like a litany of dominoes.
Okay, the crisis is over. Let's go back to work. it isn't as simple as that. Supply chain is far more complicated than that because it's so interdependent. Human beings cannot run the supply chain anymore. You can't run it. It's just too complex. The computers have to run it. And so let's just say food. From harvesting a seed, planting the seed, you know, tilling the dirt, fertilizing the dirt, you know, so a lot of times it's watering it, so there's pumps, water, all that. Harvesting it, taking it to market, canning it, printing the labels, making the cans. There can be up to 67 steps involved there, Dave, to take a seed, put it in the ground, and then to have something to put on your table. I know Mike Bloomberg kind of, you know, says it's just easy to just put a seed in the ground, but it's a far, far, far more complex than that. It kind of just shows how touchy really is with working America. Forgive the cheap shot, but
well, you're right though. You're right on the money to say it.
Farming
is a complex operation, and idiots can't perform it well. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, very, very complex. And today, it's a lot of it's computer driven. Human beings cannot manage the way it runs anymore. That era has passed just the way of manual bookkeeping. Nobody keeps manual books anymore. It's all done. You have Quicken or some other program that books are all done electronically. Nobody goes back and actually enters logs with pen and paper. I mean, you could not run a business that way anymore. You could, but you wouldn't run it effectively. I mean, when the electronic methods make it so much more efficient. So even a small business like mine, I couldn't even imagine our bookkeepers trying to do it that way. It's all done electronically. All the payments are recorded electronically. Everything's done, you know, in Quicken and, you know, segregated, different categories of whatever it is, income, outgo, whatever it is. But just imagine our little simple operation couldn't be done with, you know, human beings doing all that. Imagine a system that needs 20, 30, 40 different components to make that all work. And all those components have to come together in the right numbers. So if I'm printing labels for food, I need, well, just say X, 10 pounds of ink, and I need red, blue, green, whatever you need to make the label. And you need the acetone, and you need, you know, the pulp. So you have to have people cutting trees down to make pulp. And all that, again, it breaks down. It's not just as simple as getting it back up and running. It can take time to get that whole system up and running because A, B, C, D, E, F, G all has to be brought up at the same time, but they're all dependent on each other's product. So with that, I just encourage people, look at your preps. Really do a honest assessment of what you have. It's easy to check a box and say, you know, I've got a year's food supply. Well, Dave, you and I both know you sell the food. How many people out there are selling food supplies that, you know, a year's food supply, you know, and you start counting the calories, and if they boosted calories, it's because of sugars. Or you just add it up and you go, gosh, this is only 600 calories a day. One major food company got popped for doing that, freeze-dried food company. They got in trouble for doing that.
And they should have.
So you really need to go and look and make an honest evaluation of what you have because – keep in mind, a quarter of the world's pigs have died. That's going to put a strain on the rest of the meat products because those people that eat pig as their main primary source of meat protein are now going to go to poultry, fish, or chicken. Beef. And so it's going to put strain there. And this system can only tolerate so much of this before it breaks down. We're going to say, well, next year everything will be back to normal. Well, what happens if it isn't? What happens if this is maybe a cycle the earth is going through, or even a thing of God's judgment on a very wicked mankind, and it's going to go worse. And God does use famine to get our attention. So I ask people to really start assessing what you're doing as far as putting stuff aside. Make honest assessments, because the worst thing you can do is deceive yourself into thinking I bought, you know, this guy on TV's food supply And then you realize a serving might be 150 calories.
Oh, I know. Now, I hear you. Then listen, I want to address this, too, just for my own integrity declaration. You know, I represent MPS, and I have to tell you, they are honest with their calories. They're honest with their servings. I mean, I've had the experts check them out, and I completely trust them. And at a time when anticipated crisis is arriving to America, they're lowering their prices with nearly a 40% off sale because they want to help people, as opposed to raising what they're doing by 200% like some TV evangelists do. And I'm so proud to be associated with them. I'll just put the plug in here real quickly. It's go to preparewithdave.com, and it's restaurant quality. I've tasted it, 25-year shelf life, and none of this nonsense that Bob is talking about here. And Bob, you're right to warn people about this. But this is
and
why,
the market is rife with this, Dave.
For fraud and for price gouging. I totally agree with you. So I want to thank you for bringing that up. And I want to say this, Bob, about you. I've worked with you now for a number of years, and your products aren't hyperbole either. Your products are just as they advertise, and unfortunately there are people out there that give us both a bad name.
Yeah, and I want to tell people. Now, I don't know your supply chain of what it's looking like. I think you still have some, but I can tell you, it is getting harder to get product. I just know a lot of the some people live in China. A lot of the industrial parks are shutting down that make all the stuff the United States uses. And Dave, another thing that'll fly off this shutdown is inflation. Because, I mean, China, much as we might hate them, or not want to like them that much, they do control our inflation rate. Because Walmart and everything else that brings in, I've got the Walmart brand, Blue Jean, but Faded Glory, okay? You get a Faded Glory pair of Blue Jeans for $14.99 or $15, something like that. You go and buy a U.S. pair of blue jeans or a European-made set of blue jeans, you can pay $125 for them.
Yeah, exactly.
You can pay that much for them.
That's right.
And so if all that, and I'm just using one thing, a pair of blue jeans, but there's clothing, there's food, there's so much stuff we get out of China that you can go and get cheap right now because it doesn't, you know, they do have cheap labor and they mass produce it. If that dries up and you have to start going to buy U.S.-made products, or products brought from somebody else, the possibility of having dramatic inflation is a real issue. I mean, we could see absolutely an economic crash because of it, because all of a sudden there's so many American families, and if you're one of them, I tell you, I just pray that you ask God for, you know, say, Lord, give me a bright idea to give me a second stream of income. I mean, just see if there's a way you can get that second stream of income going, because I know there's so many Americans, Dave, right now that, you know, they run out of money on Thursday. They don't have – and Friday. So it's really tough on a lot of Americans right now. And if that kind of inflation would have hit – the ramifications of it could be very dramatic. I mean, you could have civil unrest, a lot of other things, because when people get hungry, not good. There's nothing good that comes out of hunger. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I go back to the Bible because I think it's the reference that we have that our Creator has given us as the pattern of which He deals with mankind. And if you're wise, and Daniel, it says the wise, I'll have to look up the scripture, basically the wise will prosper, but those that are wicked will go into perdition. If you're wise and you understand how God works throughout history, I tell you, I think you would cut every non-necessity out of your budget right now. I mean, you don't need cable TV. I'm sorry, you don't need it. There's a lot of other things you can do. I mean, you can get to know your family again. There's a lot of other things that you can cut money out of your budget, and I would be putting it into prepper supplies. You can always eat it. If you don't need it, you can always eat it.
That's true. You eat your steak, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you buy a ham radio. It's always a neat hobby to get into if you don't need it for emergency. But we see China right now, they're shutting down communication. And we think, well, we wouldn't do that. Oh, yes, we would. We do the same thing they're doing. And so, you know, but even if you don't need it immediately, there's always something you can do with generally the supplies preppers buy, because they're hard goods. There's things that you can implement in daily life. Now, some of them aren't, but a lot of them are. I mean, people buy ammunition. You can always use ammunition. People buy food. You can always use food. Water filter. You can always use a water filter. I mean, radios. You can always use a radio. So a lot of these things that, you know, people avoid buying because maybe they have other things in their budget that is not as necessary, you get rid of that non-necessary item out of your budget, and you can buy things that you really can use. I mean, when you watch, I mean, TV, it's gone. You don't get anything out of it except waste of time. But if you buy a radio and start learning ham radio or buy food or whatever it is, water filter, you get something out of that that just doesn't last the moment. You know, you watch an hour TV, that hour's gone, and the moment's gone. You buy a water filter, and you can do a lot with that water filter. That water filter can serve you for years. And so this is my encouragement to people. Move with holy fear, not panic. We don't want to paralyze anybody. We don't want anybody to – and I get these calls, and I just want to say calm down. If you're getting panicked right now, just take a deep breath. There's no need to panic. There's a need to prepare. And they're two different things, Dave. Panic drives people into paralysis. Preparing gives people comfort. It brings them security. I call it the panic zone. The panic zone will hit all of a sudden if the supply chain does break down and you go to your cupboard and go, I got a box of saltine crackers, 3 cans of olives, a jar of pickles, and 6 cans of baked beans. How long is that going to last me? And, you know, a couple hot packs of hot dogs. That panic zone is going to come in pretty quickly because you're going to go through that food fairly quickly. But, you know, if you had a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, in food, and you had the water to, so you can filter it and prepare it healthy, so it's healthy food. You don't want to use dirty water to prepare, you know, good food. So if you have that water filter, all of a sudden that paralysis, that panic is not there because you've prepared. So paralysis and preparation are two different things. It's like a watershed. One goes one way, one goes the other. You know, when water melts on the top of a mountain, half of it goes down one face, half of it goes down the other face, ends up in two different places. So preparation takes you one place. Preparation brings you security, peace of mind. You know, not doing it or getting panicked over it because you do something, it takes you down another way, and that ends up in paralysis, and nothing's good is going to come from that.
So what are you recommending?
Well, ideally, I recommend, you know, starting anywhere. And again, for those on you on a very, very strict budget, I mean, you can go to Walmart, buy canned chicken for $2.50 a can. Now, I don't recommend doing that all your food supply because, you know, there's only a couple year shelf life on it. I mean, you know, good food like what Dave's selling has a 25 year shelf life, and it probably lasts a lot longer than that. You know, and it's easy to make. This is the other thing a lot of people don't take into consideration. They buy dehydrated food. So that's just broccoli that's had the moisture taken out of it and put in a can, or you name it, potatoes or carrots or whatever. You know, to do that again, to make that food edible, you have to boil it and cook it, which takes a lot more fuel. You hopefully have fuel and a lot more time. So buying freeze-dried food over dehydrated food, you might pay a little bit more for the freeze-dried food, which I think everybody should be getting, and maybe just use, you know, dehydrated food for just some very few things that you can't get in freeze-dried. But getting the freeze-dried food so that you actually save a lot of time in food preparation, because if supply chain breaks down, the whole dynamic of your life is going to change because there are going to be hungry people out there. You can't let them take your stuff, so you're going to have to be on the guard. You're going to probably have to do a lot more physical labor, and you might even deal with some peripheral issues like people sick or whatever. So the consumption of food is going to go up, and the time to prepare it, if you don't have freeze-dried food, is going to go up, and that might be time you do not have. You might think you have it, but you don't, because while you're cooking food, you asked me a question one time, Dave, what do you do when that person comes to your front door begging for food, and I told you the answer. You go to the back door and see who's trying to break in. because that's the way it'll get. You know, the girl with a little baby in the front is the decoy, and the guy is coming in through the back. And in fact, I just saw a video of that. This girl with her little baby, and she was pregnant, was standing out there begging for money, and she was raking it in. And when it came time to leave, her husband came and picked up a Benz. You know, they videoed it all. So the girl, the pregnant girl, was just a deception. And the real thing is, and that's just scamming money. But when your life is on the line, you're going to need extra time. And the freeze-dried food, like you sell, that gives you the extra time to when you prepare it quickly, because all you do is add hot water. And I'll address that real quick. Say you don't have any. How do I get hot water? Well, first of all, you don't have to have hot water. It will rehydrate with cold water, and you can eat it. But everybody likes a hot meal. There's videos online. I've made one, and other people have made it. Well, you can just go down to, like, Lowe's and buy one quart, empty one-quart paint cans. And then you just take get a roll of toilet paper, pull the cardboard out of the middle, push the toilet paper in the can with the hole side up, and it'll stuff that can pretty tight. And then you just get, buy 70 to 90%, 90% works better, but 70 to 90% isopropyl alcohol. And you've made a stove. And I'm telling you, those stoves work real well. You can make it for a few bucks. And when the alcohol starts to run down, you don't let the toilet paper burn, you just add more alcohol. Nice thing about an alcohol stove, it doesn't make carbon monoxide. So, or very, 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 very little. You're never going to poison yourself with it. You can use that to heat a room. You can use that to boil water. And I mean, with a stove like that, you can put a quartz pan on there, and it'll boil it in a couple minutes. So people ask me that all the time. What do I do when I run out of fuel? Well, you can go down and buy a couple boxes of isopropyl alcohol, get yourself a dozen paint cans, and a pack of toilet paper, and you'll have stoves forever. You can give them out to friends, in fact. So these are the things I would be doing right now. Because, Dave, I could go on my accounts right now, and I read things like due to global allocation. I've never read that phrase before, ever. I had one of the people we buy a product from. It said that the Chinese government has not given us our permit to work again. So they can't even go back to work. And that is it. We're starting to see, we do have some protective mask in stock, but one brand – they've had tens of thousands ordered. And, you know, if you wait, we're telling customers to be prepared to wait 30 days to get that mask. If you want that one, we have other ones in stock, but if you want that one, you got to wait 30 days. Now, if you'd bought it last month, say 2 months ago, you'd have gotten it in a couple days. But now it's 30 days out. And with the food, you don't want to wait till it gets like that. Because when it gets like that, that paralyzing panic is going to set in to the herds. And they're just going to go rampaging to get what they can get. Right now, we're telling people, don't operate that way. Operate with a prepared mind that says, I'm going to approach this rationally. I'm going to approach this with thoughtfulness. And I'm going to really do my homework and make sure I get what my family's going to need. Because when the panic sets in, then you're going to see the hordes just go through the Walmart and just start shoveling stuff in there when they realize they can't get it. They did it after Katrina, and that was just a little puzzle of what's coming. So,
I'm almost speechless because I'm looking at the totality of what's coming, but there's a variable we barely touched on that I want to return to. Let's talk about the nature of locusts, how it's changing, and what locusts will actually do to the food supply.
Well, obviously the big thing is it's just going to eat it. I mean, they say these massive farmers in Africa are being wiped out in 30 minutes. I mean, seeing everything gone, just all gone. I mean, there's like billions of these things. Just these locusts that are just, it says it's darkening the sky. I mean, it's making it look almost like twilight because there's so many of them, it blocks the sun out. There's a map I've posted on my Facebook account where you can actually see, most of sub-Saharan Africa, parts of the Middle East, and now they're moving into China. There's a major, and that's a lot of the bread belt of the world. That's a lot of where the world is fed out of those places. And these locusts are just going through and eating it all. So, and now we see the second generation of them being born. And so, you know, you can well put stuff over. I just say I don't think that's wise to do. You can wait for what's left over, but don't do it. So,
well, when you look at locusts, how complete will this damage be? What kind of effect will it have on the food supply in terms of global volume?
Well, just think. I mean, if they go and they eat the seed corn, I mean, you know, hey, they don't got billions of seeds just laying around because seeds have a time date to them. So you go in there and they eat the seeds that they're going to plant for the next season. And, you know, that's of all things, Dave, that's what comes first. Not feeding people, making sure they have seed for next year. Because, I mean, you break that and then everybody dies. So, you know, once these locusts go in and destroy that, the question is, will they have enough seed even effectively plant a crop next year? And it might take 3 or 4 seasons for that to all recover because I don't know what percentage is, but a certain percentage of what grows is saved for seed. And if that's all destroyed, then they're not going to – if you were a pilgrim and you were at Jamestown in 1620, whatever it was, and you had, you know, 100 ears of corn, you might have eaten 90 of those over the winter. If you ate 100 of them, well, what happened in the summer or the spring when you came time to plant corn? You didn't have none to plant. You had to save those 10 ears of corn so you could get the kernels off of them and plant it. That's something people don't think about. Well, we'll just plant it again next year. Well, I fully expect to see some shortages in certain kinds of seeds that people would use to grow with if this continues. So that's a secondary or tertiary thing that's going to come out of this plague of locusts. I'm sure you can understand that. And
I remember when I asked you a question in a previous interview, how much storable food should people have? And you recommended 2 years, and then you had a corollary. And you said, and you better have some seeds.
Yeah. What I tell people all the time is, you better, at least, you know, it doesn't matter what brand of food it is, Dave. Once they freeze dry the food, it's what they call enzymatically dead food. And this is why I so strongly recommend, even if you don't eat them now, get some kind of sprouting seeds. I mean, a number 10 can of alfalfa seeds will last you forever. Well, not forever, but a long time. So you got 2 cans of them. And sprouting seeds, you can produce green living things in just a few days. I mean, you can get a mix, beans and radishes and alfalfa and broccoli and clover. And you just sprout that. You add that to the freeze-dried food supply, and you all of a sudden you're reintroducing all those living enzymes again into your diet, which actually aids in whole the processing of food through your gut and intestines. You could see those go because, I mean, sprouting seeds could go if enough of it's eaten. I mean, last year there was that massive drought. And then they tried to replant, and, you know, I think it had an early snow and some hail and other things did it. And, you know, now they're seeing this locust. China's had to shut down major production of food. Next year, if something hits South America, we could quickly find ourselves in a situation where, the seed vault in, I think it's, what is it, Finland, they would need to access that. Or the seed crops are greatly diminished. And so the ability to produce crops are greatly diminished because, again, just like those pilgrims did, they had to save a certain amount of that corn to plant it the next season.
This is beyond scary because it's all happening at one time.
Let me ask you another question here. Not to panic. We prepare. We don't panic.
No, I hear you, but this is what's frightening to me. You already have China in a meltdown situation, and near economic collapse that's underway, and then you're going to hit them with a locust. let me ask you a hypothetical question. This is hypothetical, because I think if you knew, you would have already said, can you bioengineer locusts and direct them to do certain things? I mean, is it a coincidence that China's getting hit with locusts at the same time they're going through the meltdown because of the virus?
Well, Dave, now I'm going to go nefarious. We know the globalists, in their own writings, in their own words, say we need to reduce world population. Would CRISPR technology make super locusts? Absolutely. I mean, it's not hard to do. I mean, you know, I will say this. I think only demon-possessed people do this kind of stuff. But I mean, I read a book by Judith Miller called Germs. I recommend everybody read it. Germs, Judith Miller. It's an older book. But she talks in there how we made hemorrhagic smallpox. Smallpox has a 40% fatality rate. They took some hemorrhagic disease, I don't know if it was Ebola or whatever, and they spliced those genes together, and now it's hemorrhagic smallpox. It has a 99% kill rate. I mean, you bleed out while you got smallpox. I mean, you know. I remember watching the movie Chernobyl, and they were the official was telling the hurricane, I mean, the helicopter pilot to fly over, and he wanted to see down into where it melted down. And the other guy was saying, don't do it. And the official said, if you don't do it, I'm going to shoot you. And then the scientist said, if you do it, you'll be begging for that bullet tomorrow. I mean, we've created things that are like that. And so could you easily bioengineer locusts to make them super locusts? I'm not a geneticist, but I don't see why not from what I've read. I mean, we just see they make, you know, I mean, so many things right now, they're using CRISPR technology to put animal genes in food and vice versa. I mean, absolutely. And so they, you know, the nefarious thing, and I'm not saying this is the case, I'm just saying they, by their own words, they need to reduce world population a whole bunch.
I just did a show with Paul Martin on it, and what we did was 50 minutes of exchanging depopulation quotes. You know, and the most stunning one, because of who said it and the timing, was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she said, when she was talking about Roe v. Wade, she said, mm-hmm. Society must be prevented from reproducing its undesirables.
Well, I mean, that goes all the way back to Margaret Sanger.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of these people that, I mean, you know, and just look what Bloomberg is saying. Look at the horrible racist comment, you know, black people commit all the murders. I mean, what world is he living in? I mean, I do kind of think Adolf Hitler was a little bit white, wasn't he? I mean, was Joseph Stalin white?
And Mao Zedong was not black.
No, he wasn't.
No.
So I think we all can say we've dipped into that pond once or twice, in our, if you want to put people groups involved. I think every people group on the planet has dipped into that homicidal genocide maniac mode once or more. It wasn't white. It wasn't black people that kind of like dispossessed the Native Americans. So you can tell this guy's so out of touch. I mean, but is he alone in that thinking? No, Margaret Sanger absolutely hated black people. She hated them. I mean, she called them genetic weeds. So that thinking hasn't gone away. That thinking permeates a lot of this elitist mentality. You know, we need to do this, we need to do that, let's kill them all, whatever. And, you know, the quickest way to kill people is just not feed them. Make them sick and don't feed them.
You know, there was, I did a podcast on this. It was called The Last Ship as Predictive Programming. And in the course of the show, they had three themes in the 6 years the show ran. And if you're not familiar with the show, Bob, or anybody isn't, people are going to be shocked. Number one was a virus that they discovered was independently created as a bioweapon. Number two was a famine through something that infested the seeds and kept crops from coming to fruition. And number three in the last season was a Red Dawn invasion of the United States. How do you like them, apples?
Well, it's true. Let me just read you a note I got, Dave. I'm going to segue for a second. Dear sir, I'm really sorry I haven't shipped the item. Because of the coronavirus in China, the Chinese government extended the Chinese New Year holiday. Factories, school, and any other commercial activities, including all express companies, will be off work until at least yada, yada, I'm not going to give the date. People are suggested to stay at home from the virus so it won't spread. Now, his English isn't the best, so. And he says, I'll ship it at this date, but, you know, I think that it's kind of like Bill Clinton's promises. You know, sorry for the inconvenience. I will ship the item as soon as possible. But he gives a date, but he'll ship it as soon as possible. And that's a contradictory statement. So, I mean, I just wanted to read that, Dave. That was one letter, an email I got from a supplier. So, and that supplier could be ink, the plastic, the petroleum. Yeah, the 60, 70 components that go into making food. But so, yeah, going back to that population control, it is, you know, there in Christianity, you have certain core beliefs that you have to be within to remain Christian Orthodox. You know, the Trinity, salvation by grace, salvation by faith. Those are what most of Christendom recognizes as core beliefs that you can't go outside those and be a Christian. Well, globalists have the same thing. They have this religious dogma, and the religious dogma, one of the key elements of the religious dogma, just like the key element of Christianity is you know, that Jesus Christ was God and man. The key element of their dogma is we got to kill a whole bunch of people. I mean, they say it. We got to kill lots and lots of them. And so that's their dogma. Now, keep in mind, you know, I, by the grace of God, if it ever came to the thing of saying, Bob, would you deny Jesus or are we going to shoot you? By the grace of God, I will say, there's a better life waiting for me. They believe that in the same way I believe in the deity of Jesus Christ. I mean, they're willing to die for it almost, or we'll put it this way, they're willing to make you die for it. And it's dogma to them, Dave. That's what it is. It's religious dogma. It's just not some neat little idea. Well, if we reduce this population a whole bunch, everybody will get along better. You know, no, they have a plan involved with this, and their dogma says we got to kill a whole bunch of people and billions. And so, could one be forgiven to think conspiratorial? I would say yes.
Well, I think people should be thinking conspiratorial because Paul and I went through 51 minutes of this, exchanging quotes, and we weren't even close to being done.
Yeah. Dave, I want to draw people back. I want them to think of this. In fact, if you have a pen and paper in your hand, draw a circle. And around that circle, draw A, B, C, D, as many letters as you want, E, F, G. And just think, A is the ink, B is the plastic, C is the gas, D is the rubber, E is the seed, F is the fertilizer, G is the tin, and then you have the enamel, and then you have the ink, then you have the paper, and then you have the other components. When B goes down, all the rest go down. And when all the rest go down, you just can't pull that system back up and say, well, everybody's making stuff again, let's start making food again. It doesn't work that way. The way when the supply chain breaks down, they've all become so interdependent, one can't start back up without making the other. But that one can't start back up with the one that they need. And so it's very difficult to get that supply chain back up and running. And I know, I don't know how much more time we have, but I want to leave people with that image. That is what we see going on right now. How bad it will get, I don't know. But I know it is happening. I mean, you know, if you don't think you need to repair, you know, it's just like putting five bullets in a revolver that has six chambers and, you know, or even one bullet. Put one bullet in the chamber, and if you've got five empty, how many people would be willing to spin that chamber and put the gun up and see if it shot them with it? I don't think too many people would do that, even though the odds are against the bullet being in the chamber because it's only one in six chances. But you just imagine that the supply chain is far, far more complex than one in six. It could be one in 67. And when that goes down, it isn't a matter of just opening the chamber up and putting more bullets in it. The bullets, you need the lead, you need the copper, you need the gunpowder. Gunpowder has multiple components. You need the primer. You need the whatever the jacket's made out of. You need the cardboard. You need the things you put the bullets in. You need transportation. It doesn't. You just don't start making bullets again. It becomes a lot more difficult than that.
Yeah, so. It does. And the food analogy is a good one here. In fact, I want to address food variety for a second. I've been reading that when you store food, you should definitely strive for diversity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah, I go back to the Bible. The children of Israel, now God didn't look too kindly upon it, but first of all, they got manna, and they started grumbling about manna again. I mean, there's a little popular song, manna burgers, you know, manicotti. You know, that's what they were eating, manna. And they got so food fatigued over it, they were grumbling about it. And so God sent them quail, the bird, and they started eating that. So they had a little diversity. Then they started grumbling about the quail. You know, if you have two or three selections that you're going to choose from, no matter how much you like filet mignon, no matter how much you like lobster tails, no matter how much you like whatever it is, if you ate that all the time, you're going to go, oh my gosh, I just like some popcorn. Yeah. You know, I mean, whatever, just something different. And so, yeah, you know, I would recommend having at least a couple, at best, you know, a couple dozen, maybe even a dozen and a half food selections in your supply so that you can break it up. And children are going to be greatly affected by it. You know, if you try to feed your children rice and beans every night, you know, when they're used to eating McDonald's and French fries and ice cream bars and Snickers and, you know, all that stuff that they eat now, you make that dramatic change. I'm against drugs, but you're going to need drugs for those kids. I mean, it could be rough on them.
Yeah, and I've actually read that people will actually choose to starve to death rather than keep eating the same food after a certain point in time.
Happened in Vietnam. I mean, they went native. A lot of them just went native. They weren't going to eat the you know, five fingers of death anymore. You know, that's what they called the hot dogs and the sea rats, sea rations, the five fingers of death. They weren't going to eat them anymore. And so, you know, the military went to great strides to make the food in MREs much more palatable. But still, you know, you wouldn't want to even live on that because there's so much artificial stuff in it, salt and whatever. Yeah, you know, that's a short-term solution. But when you can mix fruits and vegetables and different types of carbohydrates and put meats in it and maybe have some desserts in there, and you can start mixing that together, you're going to have people that are far more psychologically adjusted to the other hardships they're going to be facing. Imagine if you have people sick. Imagine if you have loss, and I mean loss of life. Imagine if the electricity goes down. Imagine if the water went down, and you really had to go back to 18th century. You know, if, and I'm not saying it'll be gone forever, but just imagine if it was just a couple weeks. That food diversity could really make the difference in mental well-being. You know, in that type of scenario. And so, yes, you want to have a diverse supply of different types of entrees and breakfast entrees, maybe some desserts, and even some, you know, things that will make children happy. Even if you get some, if you do get some, you know, powdered drinks, you know, something that you can give them that they're going to look forward to. And Dave, you and I probably grew up close. I think I'm a little older than you, but when I got a Coke, you know, when I was 5 years old, it was like, man, that was so cool.
Yeah.
Because we just didn't drink Coke.
Remember those days, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was like, wow, I get a Coke a week. That is so cool, you know. Millennials want to understand that because you can just go and buy 100 cans for $5 or something and drink it all day long. But in a situation where food diversity was limited, just a thing like that, they and I, you know, I have this one Coke or one, you know, thing of whatever, brownies or whatever it is, it can really make the psychological difference of keeping people psychologically on level ground.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, Bob, we got about 2 minutes left in this segment, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about, well, we've talked about supply chain now, and ready-made resources is a valuable supply chain for personal prepping. So if you were to choose like two or three things to say, hey, you know, besides the food, what do you need? What would you tell them?
Well, I want to tell people, first of all, please be aware, 90% of our customers now are new customers.
Yeah.
That should tell you something, Dave.
Yeah, I hear there's going to be a run.
I'm entering them into UPS, and it's like, well, this guy's not in UPS, this guy's not in UPS, this person's not in UPS, this girl's not in UPS. And so I want to tell people, be prepared, even with us, and we've hired extra people, to see a slowdown in delivery. I mean, we sell a lot of different products. If you ever come to our store, we've up-inventoried. You can't hardly walk through our store, put it that way. It's just packed with everything.
Okay, got that. But in the time left, give me a couple suggestions, because people want to hear this.
I cannot stress enough. Scepter 20-liter jerry cans, we have them. They're very durable, military grade. You can store water in them. And it's not so heavy you can't move them. I would recommend having those.
How many would you get?
I get at least four of them. I mean, you have 20 gallons of water, immediately, and you can move it because it's only 40 pounds. The Kato 900 shortwave radio, so I can listen to what's going on around the world. And again, the ham radio. I mean, you want to be able to talk to your family members.
Correct.
Night vision. I mean, just all those things I think are going to become so much of force multipliers that you are going to see the absolute difference when we get through the other end of this. People who prepared are going to come out far better. We will suffer loss. Some of us might not even make it. But I think if you look at the group of people who prepared as a whole, you're going to see a far greater percentage of those people who come out on the other end of this thing in a much, much better posture.
I totally agree. And give us some contact information.
Well, my website is readymaderesources.com. My email address, and it's a good way to get in touch with me, is robert@readymaderesources.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then the phone number, which, again, we're answering as best we can, 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809, robert@readymaderesources.com, and then just readymaderesources.com if you want to go online and purchase.
Yeah, and you're there at the ready. And one thing I'll mention, too, that you did not mention, Bob, so shame on you, is that you're one of the few guys I know in your business that will actually consult with people for free. And that's really an admirable service you're providing. And you've been listening to Bob Griswold here from ReadyMadeResources.com. And this has been the Common Sense Show, and we want to thank all of you.